Alrighty. Good morning. I'm going to start by saying I agree with the previous speakers. We shouldn't be talking about digital wallets. It's fundamentally the wrong abstraction for the development and the standardization layer. It might be good for end users, though. So today I'm going to be talking about verifiable credentials in relation to query and how we can do zero knowledge over that query. I'm going to start with a bit about myself. So I'm Jesse Wright. I wear many hats. One of those hats is as a researcher at Oxford, where I am working on neurosymbolic AI systems. And I am trying to build AI agents that faithfully represent human entities, work faithfully with data on your behalf, and help you manage your life. I'm also lead of the SOLID project over at the Open Data Institute, which is a project that Tim Berners-Lee created back in 2014 at MIT to give people back control of their personal data. So SOLID is a personal data store solution that allows you to build applications that don't store data on corporate servers, but instead store your personal data in cloud storage such that you can reuse it as you go across the web. We talk about being able to use digital wallets for things like sharing your address, improving your address. With SOLID, I have an authoritative source of my address. So that means that I update it once, and my insurance company gets it straight away. My university gets it straight away. I have authority over my data. And I've been working on SOLID in particular for many years. I used to work for Tim's company, Inrupt, as an enterprise software engineer and data architect over there. And SOLID is already very heavily involved in the data wallets space. In fact, one of the donated open wallet
contributed.
Thank you. came from Inrupt. And I work a lot on standards. At the moment, I am in 14 standards bodies through the W3C, mainly coming from the semantic web perspective, as is going to become obvious throughout my talk. So what is a wallet? What are we talking about when we have a digital wallet? My suggestion is that it's a way to prove that someone said something. Fundamentally, that is what we're doing. When I get issued with a credential that has my driver's license, all that is saying is that a driving authority, the driving authority that gave you this credential, says that you're accredited to drive. So to me, a digital wallet is a way of saying that someone said something. A generalization of that concept is to say that digital wallets help supply some evidence to help someone believe something. So when I get my digital driver's license, that is evidence that I can supply to a car rental company that helps them establish that I am an accredited driver. And this idea has been around forever. We call it provenance if you've been in semantic web spaces for a while. So if we look at the verifiable credential spec from the W3C, for instance, there's two core features to it that support this. The first is signatures. So the signature is the way of having the driving authority prove that they stated something with their public-private key signatures. And then the other useful feature that I believe comes from W3C verifiable credentials is this notion of selective disclosure, which means once I've been issued this digital driver's license, I don't have to tell everyone everything from it. I can instead just reveal my date of birth that's present on this digital credential. However, only selective disclosure is possible, not derivation of facts. So if it is my date of birth stated in that verifiable credential, I must tell you my birthday. I can't prove that I'm over 18. I can't prove that I'm a Commonwealth citizen. I have to say that I'm Australian. And that is all the standard support today through these BBS signatures, which I believe the other group mentioned. So if we look at the use cases where these kind of verifiable credentials are being used, and we want to use them, I put it to you, are the current standards enough? So One common use case that we're seeing now is GaiaX, which is doing a lot of secondary data reuse in the medical system in places like Luxembourg. But when it comes to health, and I'm thinking about studies that I might want to do, a very naive one might be to get an anonymized data set that has correlations between ages and BMIs of everyone in a particular country. Now, if I'm doing this for research purposes and I want to publish a study, I want to be sure that that data is true. I don't want to have to trust some third party to have aggregated it correctly and then claim to me that they've aggregated it correctly. I actually want proof that all of the values that I've been given are issued by invalid hospitals throughout the country that I come from. And what about on-demand data integrity? So I mentioned driving authorities earlier. What if I want to prove that I'm eligible to hire a car in the country that I've come from, but I only want to provide that Boolean answer? I don't want to tell them anything about my visa status or my driving credentials in the country that I come from. I don't even want to reveal where I'm born. Can the current standards make this integration possible so that I can integrate this data and provide it to a company? And can they help make it more privacy preserving? So this led me to the question of, can we support zero knowledge proof over Sparkle queries so that we can base verifiable credential standards around Sparkle instead of around fixed credential structures? Now, as a show of hands, who here has heard of Sparkle and knows what the hell I'm talking about? Okay, half the crowd. Who here likes Sparkle or semantic web standards? Ooh, tough crowd. Okay, this is gonna be fun. Let's start with why I think we should be using these kind of standards. So what we've got up here is a set of data in an emergent RDF standard called RDF 1.2. And what this allows you to do is talk about claims. So instead of saying that that is my date of birth, I'm going to say that the driving authority claims that my date of birth is 6th of April 2000. And instead of just in a database stating that my citizenship is Australia, I'm going to state that the UK Immigration Authority claims that my country is Australia. Now, you might be going, well, isn't this what the VC standards are already doing? We have the data in this credential, and then we add a signature to it. One caveat there. We're in verifiable credential standards at the moment actually stating all this data at the top level. So you're saying there's a credential. Jesse does have this date of birth. Jesse does have that citizenship. Oh, and by the way, here's a signature to prove that. We're not fundamentally modeling the fact that these are all claims that anyone can make, and the data inside those angle brackets is not necessarily ground truth. That's just stuff claimed by these parties. And then what we want to be able to do is not have these custom procedures of integrating credentials and deriving proofs. We want to be able to have standards so that we can write queries like this one, where I can just ask, is that Jesse's date of birth? Or is Jesse's date of birth over 2006, so I'm over 18? And does he have citizenship of a Commonwealth country? There's a standard to write this. We don't need to write custom business logic in programming languages of choice. We can do this all in standards. So I had about half the hands come up for Sparkle and RDF. So I'm going to very, very quickly do the breakneck tour of what is a Sparkle query. So I'm hoping more of you have interacted with SQL. But Sparkle is just a query language. It's nothing to be scared of, that allows you to query over data on the web in a standardized format. So here we've got a query that's asking, is Ruben, we're wanting to see all the people that are born in the same place as Ruben and younger than him. And we're wanting to construct some derived facts that generate the fact that that person shares the place of birth and is older than, but we're no longer revealing the date of birth and the birthplace. And in DBpedia, which is an open data set, there's actually hundreds of people that share this date of birth with... Ooh, I've lost my microphone. That share this date of birth with Ruben and are younger with him, so we can get this set of query results. And on an open web of data where I trust that all these facts are true, this works quite well already. Sparkle's been around for decades. But we haven't had ways of talking about facts until now, and this is where the RDF 1.2 reification that I was talking about comes in. So now we can talk about statements according to people. So now if we look at that query we just had for Ruben, what we really want to do is say, is there a way of asserting that Ruben shares the same birthplace as someone and is older than that person according to some derived proof? That's what we want to get to. And moreover, I don't want that just to be any old proof. I want that proof to reveal at most the fact, reveal at most which entities stated the ground truths used to derive this fact. So I want to state that this is true, and all you need to trust is the Belgian government to get there. Can we do this? Well, when I pitched this talk, I didn't know. And I can tell you quite confidently the answer now is yes. And remarkably, despite my, I think someone else here was quite skeptical of blockchain before, despite that shared skepticism, they've actually managed to produce in the blockchain space a very useful privacy-enhancing technology called zero-knowledge virtual machines. RISC-0 is one of them. It came into major release, I believe, late last year, but don't quote me on that. And the very naive way you can get everything I was just talking about working is to take one of these zero-knowledge virtual machines, take a Sparkle query engine that's written in Rust, and run that inside the zero-knowledge virtual machine. Because this thing can prove correct execution of arbitrary Rust code and then reveal the outputs of a function. So concretely, if we look at the implementation, I just need to prove how short the code for this is, and then I'll check the time. I've got a few minutes. 72 lines of code, less than. Most of this is just data pipelining, and that's not sharing it because of... Let's exit that. There we go. 72 lines of code. Most of it is just converting data and parsing data. Nothing really interesting happening in here, but we're able to do the zero knowledge proof in, as I say, 72 lines of code. So that's useful. And it's a very naive approach. There is one gotcha to this approach, which if we look at the proving time, it did take 62 seconds to show that I was over 18, which isn't really what we want. So yes, the gotchas. Proving time. Secondly, the proof is dependent on this implementation of a query engine, which from a security perspective isn't great because you have to audit the whole query engine. We can't do standards based security audits. And the modeling of this could be improved because we've just chucked an existing query engine in there. We don't have what I was wanting to have at the start, which is this derived proof as part of a query result. Instead, the proof has come outside of the query result. So let's address the 62 seconds first. Can we make it faster? And I'm going to start speaking faster too because my time's running out. The answer is yes. There's ways of building custom circuits. There's also things like zero-knowledge theorem provers where you can implement this. And based on comparisons to other projects that have implemented in zero-knowledge virtual machines and then in SAT solvers, we can expect a 100 to 1,000x speedup, optimistically. So that brings us down to under a second, perhaps 200-ish nanoseconds, within what's reasonable for a latent request on the web anyway. Standardization, yeah. So what we need to do is we need to move from where we've got the zero-knowledge virtual machine proving stuff over Rust code to instead proving stuff over Sparkle algebra operations so that we can have the proof in a standard manner that can have multiple implementations. And then the last thing, I had a very small number of hands up when people talked about how much they loved Sparkle. I love Sparkle, but that is just me. So abstractions are important for both users and developers, and we can hide most of what I've just been talking about from everyone. For instance, I'm going to slip that slide. There's data shape languages like Shackle, where you can define the form of what you want your outcoming credential to be, and just to say, okay, go to the database, do the queries, get the data, and then just build the credential for me. And this is what I want the shape of the credential to look like. This would be a social security number credential. And that way, you don't have to deal with all the data query layers, all the provenance, and all the stuff that is only fun for people like me. So where do I want to go from here? Well, this is a very small part of everything I'm doing. So fundamentally, I'm looking for people also interested in zero knowledge over queryable credentials. If you want to work on the performance optimization or put resourcing into that, please. If you want to work on the modeling, the data modeling around this, also good. And to ground this work, I really want to build it out in the context of the Gamma Trust framework in the UK and IDAS. So if anyone wants to actually build this out in applications, I would love that. And then in terms of future work, so the other reason I find this all exciting is with the query engine I just had, you can have some really cool applications come out, like emergent multi-party computation. So we can do things like not revealing my salary to anyone, but being able to have an aggregate salary of my workplace developed with a proof that that aggregate salary is true. So we have a lot more privacy-enhancing technologies available when we turn this infrastructure into multiple query engines and query planning. And also when we integrate this with things like ODRL, we can start to pull data on demand in compliance with user consent. We talked about consent before, and user data sharing options very nicely. Last thing, someone asked about a reading list before. That's my recommended reading list. So if you want to take a photo and look that up, go for it. And I'll leave that there while I answer some questions.
Please raise your hand if you have a question. Please repeat the question. Back there, flat hat. No, you.
Yep. Yeah.
Blockchain is a bigger world. For me, it's a separate cryptographic tool, which is used in blockchain, but also I use it with like zero knowledge and IB. Without blockchain, it's a standalone cryptographic tool. There is ZKVM, is like one of those, but there's also other tools which go more deeper level, more faster because of that. So I think that even if you don't like the blockchain, you should look into it.
Plus one on that. Any other? Oh, sorry. The it was more a comment than a question, but I will repeat it, which was to say that yes, the whole zero knowledge space is a privacy enhancing technology that happens to be used within blockchain, but is not a blockchain thing in and of itself, and it's used in many other contexts. The reason I referenced blockchain in my talk is because it is, I think, a blockchain company that's developed the zero knowledge virtual machine that I happen to use. But that's, again, just because it's a core technology. They also build tools for caching and web libraries. I would use those in the same way. Any other questions?
Maybe a bit of a pragmatic question, but if you want to implement this kind of zero knowledge proof, for example, I want to go to rent a car in another country, I want to provide my fact that I have a valid Belgian driving license, but I can imagine that in different countries driving licenses are structured differently. We have different classes in Belgium, motorcycle, normal car, truck. Maybe a different country doesn't distinguish it. How do we structure that and still allow, I have a problem with the structure of the data where the different authorities can provide completely different structures for same concepts, and how do we interpret it?
There's a few ways to go about it. So my immediate answer to that is to have the driving authority of each country define in, again, structured RDF or notation 3, if you've ever heard of that, which is less likely, define what the requirements are in a given country for you to be considered a driver of a Class C car or that kind of vehicle. And you can, so that can also be signed. Again, it's all just about someone proving that statements are true. So if you have the Australian government state that a UK Class C vehicle is equivalent to an Australian Class E vehicle, and publish that and sign that, then you can do the derivations to do that data integration.
Too much from our authorities.
I like to live with a slight amount of optimism. fair point. But I, at the end of the day, you need to trust someone to write the business logic, whether that's an authority, whether that's a trusted intermediary. So one of the, like in the UK with the DVS framework, they're certifying 50 or so companies as digital verifiers. I see it as quite a valid possibility for those companies to also, there's about 50 companies, I think, that are going to be certified as part of the Gamma Trust framework. And I see it as quite a valid possibility that those companies are also trusted for issuing data about how to align certain schemas and how to do that kind of data integration, because they are already trusted within this framework.
Any other questions?
Yeah, first off, thank you for a very interesting talk here. This I find it very interesting, but how do you ensure that the organizations that own the data sets or have the data sets, that they put in limitations on what type of queries that is allowed towards the data sets? Because otherwise, if you just allow them to query, let's say freely, they could take out knowledge from the data sets that you would otherwise try to hide. For instance, I want to know all people in this data set that is over the age of this, like male, living in this area, etc. At some point, the return set is so specific that you are losing the anonymous.
So I'm going to go back.
The governance task in this, but
I very much agree. So this is where I come from the solid perspective. So in the solid view of the world, you have your own personal data store, and within that data store you can put a set of credentials amongst other data, but you can put credentials in there. And what you have living on top of that store is a set of access and usage control policies. So I, as the data subject, am defining who I permit to access my data and for what purposes I permit them to use it. So in the context of healthcare, it might be I permit trusted research institutions in the UK and Europe to access my data for the purpose of aggregate health studies. The query then is not necessarily done on the health NIH's servers. It's a query that's done either through communication between my pod and other pods, or some third-party aggregation service that is trusted to access this data and has a policy engine implemented to ensure that it's only pulling and resharing data within the bounds of express user consent. Does that answer the question? There's ODRL as a policy language, for instance.
Or you could just make a number of queries where you can extrapolate data.
Well, that's that's a problem outside of this context. If I have credential about, you know, health data here, and a credential about health data here, and a credential about my address here, and I choose to reveal all three to a particular agency, they can do exactly the same kind of correlative analysis you're talking about. So to make sure I'm understanding your question correctly, to take it to an extreme example.